This is the NedGroup Investments podcast, where we explore a variety of views and insights that investors care about.
Welcome to the NedGroup Investments Insights podcast. My name is David Levinson of NedGroup Investments, and today I'm very excited to have Rob and Erica of AfriClimate joining us in the studio. Guys, thanks for coming in to chat.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, David.
Can you tell us a bit about your journey so far and why you started AfriClimate?
Sure, thanks, Dave. It's been quite a journey that we've been through over the last couple of years. Both Eric and I started our careers in investment banking, similar to yourself, but it was about 5 years ago that we each made the change from our respective organizations to join the conservation movement. So for me, it was two things. There's lots of global rhetoric about climate change and about biodiversity loss that drove me to an understanding that I needed to do something a little bit more purposeful. So that was at the macro level. And then at the micro level, I just observed personally that a place that I used to go fishing at in the Natal North Coast, as a kid, we used to catch lots of fish and have a fantastic time. But by the time I got to university, it wasn't the same. You didn't catch fish there and the water wasn't as clean as it used to be. So I had this kind of both professional and personal calling to do something a bit different. And I found myself at a global NGO after my time in banking. And this NGO was a place where I spent 4 or 5 years learning about conservation and trying to get at the, you know, really at the coalface, excuse the turn of phrase, but at the coalface of doing something good for the planet. And that's where Eric and I joined forces. And it was really during that little chapter, we learned a lot about attracting alternative sources of finance to conservation outcomes. And during that time, we realized that there was a need to do this at scale. And so at the beginning of this year, we left the NGO and started AfriClimate to essentially act as that bridge and bring together, you know, the skills and the resources that we learned during our time in banking and finance and the real urgency of action that was needed by the conservation sector. So we built that and we're very excited to be where we are today. And we see a lot of optimism for the future.
Oh, and we're excited to have you and optimistic. And I love chatting to anybody in sustainable finance or responsible investing. They all seem to anchor on this moment in their lives where they had a bright light or a green light moment. Maybe we can use that term today, with a pivot, at least their career towards sustainability. And you spoke about fishing in KZN. Maybe not many of our viewers are, or listeners at least, are familiar with this, but the world has lost around 2/3, I think, of its wildlife population in the last 70 years alone. And we're starting to realize the ecosystem services that nature provides, as well as an avenue, I guess, for investors in general. So, Erica, I'd like to bring you in here. What trends are you seeing in the African context of conservation and climate finance specifically?
I think we're starting to see some trends driven by the global north. So as the carbon credit market matures, we're seeing an increasing focus from buyers on higher quality credits from very robust, well-audited projects. But what we're also seeing is some trends driven from within Africa. So governments are starting to regulate the carbon markets in their own countries as they're beginning to see the financial and development opportunities that climate finance can bring. But I think most excitingly, we're seeing the development of methodologies more suited to African landscapes, where solutions focus on grasslands, wetlands, livestock management, rewilding. You know, broadly speaking, Africa is nature rich and cash poor. As a continent, we need to think how to use this growing green finance market to our advantage. You know, Africa's always been rich in natural resources, but in the past, these were extracted and little benefit really remained on the continent itself. So I think what's great is that when climate finance initiatives are well designed, most of the benefits from a project can stay within landscapes and within the communities that created them.
I see. So typically you have these big corporates emitting tons of carbon dioxide, and what they do is they go into the carbon market to look to purchase credits and offset this. Is that correct?
Exactly. You know, many corporates have net zero commitments. So the first part of what they do is they look at how they reduce their own emissions. And then the second part is that they explore how they can purchase offsets to counteract the emissions that they can't reduce themselves. And I think what's been interesting to see is that the, you know, initially sort of any offsets were purchased from all sorts of funny projects. But now it's moved to a space where companies are becoming more familiar with the markets, what are good creditors, what are bad creditors, and are looking more to nature-based carbon credit markets to produce these offsets.
I love your comment about Africa being nature-rich, so can really put us at the center of this carbon market for sure. Rob, bringing you back in here, maybe you can give us an example of how one of these deals might work from an investment and impact point of view.
Sure, Dave. So I'll just try and give a theoretical example that people can understand. But the broad premise and the real exciting opportunities we see in this nature-based solution space is, and that's relevant to the 30 by 30 targets that we've got, is around expanding protected areas. Now, those can be private protected areas or nationally protected areas. But if you just think about an example, if you're an investor and you own a game farm somewhere, it's very likely that reserve or that protected area that you own is costing you more every year than it can earn, even if you've got perhaps a small ecotourism product on that. And so at the moment, the cost of conservation is negative. But if we're going to hit these targets, we actually need to expand these areas. We need to connect, you know, we need to create these interconnected corridors between national parks and other protected areas in order to allow wildlife to move and to roam freely and protect genetic biodiversity. So how do you do that if it's going to be more expensive to do than you can possibly earn from it? And I think, as Erica was saying, there's an opportunity with climate finance. If you can expand your protected area and create some type of carbon positive intervention, now that might be rewilding it, it might be planting trees or some element of restoring that landscape, you can earn carbon credits from that. And if carbon prices reach the levels that are forecast, those revenues may be able to more than offset the cost of that increased conservation area and justify the investments in the first place. So for us, it's really about packaging and creating these investment opportunities where people can increase their protected areas, do something good for the planet and good for the climate, very good for biodiversity, and as Erica mentioned earlier, if it can be tied in with communities that perhaps own these areas in between national parks and protected areas, that benefits them as well. I think we can really create a triple win opportunity that's good for investors and good for everyone else.
Sure thing, that social empowerment can be quite a powerful tool in driving some of this change and taking ownership of these projects as well. And you mentioned 30 by 30, so just as a reminder to our listeners, this came out of one of the more recent COP meetings around setting aside 30% of land for conservation by 2030. It almost feels like we're talking about a new asset class in a lot of ways, and I don't mean to make light of that. I mean, from a return profile to complement something like equities, bonds, cash, property, etc. But maybe, Erica, onto you, why should investors be thinking about this space particularly?
I think investors should be thinking about this, as you mentioned, you know, it is a new asset class, and they should be thinking about it like other asset classes. So the first reason is that well-designed projects do have good financial returns. It's important for any investor, and we've seen good opportunity for investment in this space. And then the second one is, you know, I'm not sure how many industries or investments you can think of that have predominantly positive externalities, both for the environment and for people. You know, there's very few. I've sort of tried to go through all the various industries, but there's very few I can think of that only has, you know, really these positive outputs. So also, you know, importantly, the climate finance market appears relatively inaccessible for most investors, so most retail institutional investors. And I think a good place to start if you are an individual or a fund invested in listed stocks is to actively interrogate the companies that you're invested in. So start by looking at their net zero commitments. See, you know, as we discussed earlier, what are their plans to reduce their own greenhouse gas emissions? What are the plans to reduce their impact on biodiversity? And then to look at where they're choosing to offset any remaining emissions, are those really high quality projects? Do those projects truly have co-benefits for people and for nature? I think something quite interesting is South Africa is one of the only countries in the world that has actually met its greenhouse gas emission reductions targets. And unfortunately, that's largely driven by load shedding. But it's actually caused a shift that's going to be great in the long term. Companies are going to be using more renewable energy than they would have otherwise. And it makes them more sustainable, both from an environmental and from a financial point of view.
So maybe the tough state of Eskom as well has probably been something that's contributed to large corporates taking themselves off the grid towards cleaner sources of energy.
Exactly. It's one of those things that I think, you know, we're feeling the pain of it now in terms of the cost of converting. But yeah, really in the long term, it is a good thing for the country's development.
I'm glad you raised that point. I think the majority of our listeners will be institutional clients as well as financial advisors and trying to get understanding of how they can adopt or think about this in terms of their own portfolios. And you mentioned looking at the underlying companies, you know, checking the authenticity of their targets. Are they science-based? Are they looking to meet net zero by 2040 or 2050 or whatever that may be? So thanks for bringing back to that. I appreciate that. And then maybe the parting question from myself, because I always like to end off on a positive note. Maybe first, you can have a crack at this, Rob. What are you currently most excited about?
So Dave, before we started this journey, I was often filled with a kind of dread that we get when we hear about climate change and the disasters facing our planet. However, the last couple of years that I've spent at the coalface that we spoke about of conservation, I see so many people doing the right thing. I see so much reason to be optimistic for the future. There's the most incredible scientists, the most amazing conservationists out there working so hard for the good of the planet. And it gives me massive, massive reason to be optimistic about the future. I think the fact that we're talking today means there's a world of institutional investors that are going to be thinking more and more about the space and applying their investment capital to it. And that is going to make the future, I think, better. And I think that there's a chance that, you know, 20 years' time, I could be standing back on the Natal North Coast fishing with my grandchildren and enjoying the same scenario I had when I was a child. Because, you know, the world is resilient, nature can bounce back. And I think if we all, you know, do something positive and invest where we're supposed to, it's going to be a wonderful future. And I can't wait to see it.
Thanks, Rob. Erica?
I think for me, it's, you know, it's the personal aspect similar to what Rob mentioned, but it's also, just as a continent, I think this is a great opportunity for Africa. You know, as we mentioned earlier, Africa is rich in nature. And I think we can use that to our advantage. So, you know, use our natural resources, not necessarily to enrich, you know, countries outside of Africa, but to enrich ourselves, both our people and our environment. It's, I think we're standing at a really important turning point, and it needs both government and investors to recognize that these projects need to be well designed, well regulated. But if they're done properly, it's going to be a great thing for the continent.
Excellent. I don't think I could have said it better. So thanks again, both of you. I really appreciate your comments today. If anybody would like to find out more, you can go have a look at africlimate.com. And of course, our own NEG Group Responsible Investment Journey can be also read up a little bit more on our website. So thanks again for both of you for joining us today. And maybe we'll catch up soon.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, David.
This podcast is for marketing information only. The information contained in the podcast or video was for information purposes and does not constitute advice, recommendation, or an offer or solicitation to purchase or sell any funds or strategies to any person in any jurisdiction in which the offer, recommendation, or solicitation to purchase would be unlawful.